Susie. So I just have a few comments on them. Actually, these are the ones that are useful for phenomenology, because if you'll remember, the standard model, until electric synchrony breaking, only has massless fields in it. And so these are the ones that we use when we supersymmetrize the standard model. And we characterized these massless multiplets, remember, by lambda. So we had spins, or helicities, I should say. We had lambda and lambda minus a half in a supermultiplet plus CPT conjugates, which just gives you the negative helicity state. So let's give you some examples of supermultiplets that we'll use. So if we have lambda equals a half, so we have, with the CPT conjugates, we have helicities plus or minus a half, and we also have two scalars associated with it. Okay, and an example of these, so we can see here we have some fermions, massless fermions, where we can stick some standard model fields, and so in fact that's where they'll go. So I can put a quark in here, a lepton, and each one of these will have two scalar partners. So we have, they're called squarks, the spin zero copies of the quarks, and two spin zero copies of the lepton. And in fact, you know, we do that for every family. So we're going to have three families of squarks. And so for every quark, so for a top quark, say, we have two squarks. One of them's called stop left, and the other one's stop right. So it's the copy of the... okay, so actually I'll show you how they're written. So if we have a... I'll just give you an example of a top quark. So this, of course, in the standard model, we have a left-handed guy and a right-handed guy, okay? And each one of these has a scalar copy. So they're written with a tilde, like that. Stop left and stop right. So, of course, scalars don't have, don't have chirality, but it's just that they're the copy of the fermion that does. All right. And then we have, in the standard model, we also have Higgs, which is a scalar. So that's going to live in the spin zero part of one of these supermultiplets, and it has a spin a half copy, the Higgsino. Okay, and remember that we have a direct product with the gauge group. So all the quantum numbers, apart from spin, of these guys are the same as their partners on the left-hand side, okay? So there are three colors of squark. Yep.
I'm sorry, I was supposed to
be
in this class, but did you, is there a reason why a superpartner of a spin one half isn't spin one?
Yeah, I'm just going to get onto that in a sec. Yeah, it's a good question. That's also a good question. Actually, they can have different masses, but the main thing is, you remember... sorry? Yeah, okay. So, all right, in the massless case, then remember that this has SU2 quantum numbers, the left-handed guy, whereas the right-handed guy doesn't. And so this one will couple to the W boson, and also this one couples to the W and that one doesn't. So, yeah, for instance. And they actually have different hypercharges as well.
So do we get two Xenos, one way of chelicity and four two things?
I'm sorry?
Do we have two, like a left-handed and a right-handed
Xeno? Actually, the Higgs sector get... we're going to have two Higgs doublets, actually, so it's going to get more complicated in general, and, you know, we'll see later how that works. Yeah. Okay. Good. All right, so, there was a question. In fact, I'll go to the other board. What happens with... Why don't we put it in these representations? Lambda equals 1. So, of course, here we have... spin 1 and spin 1 half, or helicity 1 and helicity 1 half, massless fields. But remember, these spin 1 fields are problematic in general in quantum field theory. If you have a spin 1 field, it has to be an adjoint representation of the gauge group. In quantum field theory. Otherwise, it's you get a non-renormalizable theory. Okay, so you're not allowed to put in a quark in here, because then you'd have a spin 1 particle with only that's in the fundamental representation of the gauge group. And, it'd be non-renormalizable. So we're forced here to put only the gauge bosons. So in general, gauge bosons. So the photon, gluon, Z boson, for instance, W bosons. Actually, well, strictly speaking, I'm in the... I should really talk about the hypercharge boson, because we're in the unbroken limit, and the W. Okay, and then on the spin half copies are the Beano, the Gluino, and the Winos. Why knows? Okay, and these are actually, it turns out these are Majorana fermions. But we'll get into that later. So, of course, just the same thing. We have 8 color states for the gluon and 8 color states for the gluino, yeah. Yeah. So, because we've written n equals 1 cz in a direct product with the standard model gauge group, that means that, there's no non-trivial, it means basically what you said. All the generators of this must commute with all the generators in here, and therefore, the multiplets of this must have the same quantum numbers under these guys. Yeah.
I'm just curious, how does one even write down the action for a spin 1 particle not in the joint of the gauge group?
Well, it won't. I could write down. Let's suppose we have QCD. But I try and write down, it won't be gauge invariant in the.
Right.
It's fundamentally, you could try and write it down, and you would have something that isn't gauge invariant, and that theory is non-renormalizable. That's the problem. Yeah. So you could try and put it in the singlet, for instance. You can still, you can couple a gluon to a quark in the singlet, right? Because. That's still a color singlet of under the global SU3, but it's just then the gauge transformation, the gauge properties will be broken. Gauge invariance.
Okay.
Okay. And there is a more exotic case that we're interested in, which is lambda equals 2. And that one contains a spin 2 object, which is identified with the graviton. Spin 2 generically means graviton. And it has a partner, which is spin 3 halves. And that one's the gravitino. So you'll hear people talk about the gravitino. This can be important, actually, for phenomenology sometimes, especially if it's the lightest supersymmetric particle. It's very has a large impact on the phenomenology. Okay. Let's go on now to massive n equals 1 supermultiplet. So basically what we're going to, the masses, okay, we know in fact that, you know, the tops get mass and stuff. So in terms of these massless supermultiplets, some of these particles will get their masses through electroweak symmetry breaking and the Higgs mechanism. Actually, at the end of the day, we're going to have to break supersymmetry as well. So in fact, some of the supersymmetric particles will get additional mass contributions from Susy breaking. Okay, but they're built from massless supermultiplets in the first place. However, there are other states. I think you've heard of you've dealt with BPS states a lot and so on, and they come from these massive representations, actually, in extended supersymmetry. So these have other uses in quantum field theory and so on. So we're going to discuss massive supermultiplets. We'll start with n equals 1. And we'll go on to develop extended Susy after this subtopic. Okay, so now we've got a mass. We can go to the mass frame of whatever particle we're talking about in the supermultiplet. We have our two Casimirs. The first one, p mu p mu, is just m squared. And the second one, the C2 twiddle, is 2m to the 4 times yi, which where I goes from 1 to 3. And yi is actually called the superspin. This is the thing, really, that's the generalization of the spin. Superspin yi, which is defined as ji minus 1 over 4m q bar sigma bar I q. So it's related to the ordinary angular momentum operator j, and it has the same commutation relation. As SU2, if you work it out, because you know that these J's have the same thing, then you just have to work out commutators involving this second term. So we can label a multiplet, so the multiplet is labeled by the eigenvalues of these two Casimirs, but equivalently we can just label it by the mass and the overall superspin. So, of course, this superspin operator y squared has, just like the usual spin, has eigenvalues of some integer or half integer times the same thing plus 1, just like spin does. So we just go through the same procedure as for the massless case. We look at the anticommutator of Q alpha and Q bar beta dot, and we substitute in our four momentum, and now this is what we get. So, of course, this is just sigma zero. So we know how to normalize our states. So we have a Q or a bar over root 2m times some state. So that, in total, will be a normalized state of norm 1. And now we notice that we don't have this feature where one of the operators is zero. They can both do something on the state. So let's choose some initial state such that the Q's annihilate it. And we can choose that one in general just by, you know, defining the state by some of these Q's times another state, just like we said before. So in that case, when we operate on it with the superspin, okay, Q annihilates this thing. So for this one state, the superspin is the same as the spin. So for some given mass and superspin, we can label this state as by the mass, the superspin, which is equal to the spin in this case, by p mu, well, and its J3 eigenvalue. So what we want to do now is work out how Q and Q bar affects J3, or in fact J in general. So use commutation relation A. So that's between Q alpha and M rho sigma. Okay, you can multiply, you can take the case where rho and sigma go from 1 to 3. You can multiply it by an epsilon tensor to get something proportional to J. So this is something you could do in the tutorial, potentially. Okay, and if you do that, you'll see that that's the commutation relation you get between Q and J, and there's an equivalent one between J and Q bar. Okay, so we just apply these sorts of commutation relations to the states, just the same as we did for the massless supermultiplets. And if you do that, We'll normalise them. Okay, so I'm missing off all the other labels, but basically it's the same thing but with J3. We get a state with J3 plus a half if we act with a Q1 bar dot, and if we act with a Q2 bar dot on some state with some J3, we get the opposite third component of the spin. So in general, you know, someone mentioned before that some of the commutation relations we were looking at, I think it was you actually, looked like angular momentum commutation relations. Of course, these are the angular momentum commutation. These are just like raising and lowering operators now, these Q1 and Q2. And in fact, so you can see that Q alpha dot bar acting on omega just behaves exactly like coupling two spins. Coupling spin J and spin a half. As we know, we get two possibilities when you combine two spins quantum mechanically, one with J3 plus a half and J3 minus a half. So actually, we know we're going to get a linear combination of total spins. So from quantum mechanics, from the quantum mechanical coupling of spins, this yields a linear combination of two possible total spins. J plus a half and J minus a half, since J cross a half is J minus a half plus J plus a half. Okay, so we know what's happened to J3 here, but we don't know what's happened to the total spin. But once we realize that it behaves just like coupling spins in quantum mechanics, we know how it's going to look. We just get a linear combination of the two. So we have some constant K1 of the superspin y plus a half, and we have some other constant k2 times the total spin superspin y minus a half state, but it must have j3 plus a half for the third component, and the same thing for q2 dot bar, with some different constants. okay, and they can be whatever, normalized and so on. So we have a couple of different states here, and the only other non-zero ones than these two are omega itself, which has spin j equal to y, and another state, q2 dot bar, q1 dot bar over 2m times omega. So this also has spin j, and in fact it's a different state to the original. It's not proportion, it's, we call it omega primed. We know omega prime is different to omega because we can act on it with q1. Remember, q1 acting on omega was 0, but if you act on this thing with q1, you get something which is different to 0. Because you can use the anti-commutation relations, and you still get something different to 0. So it's a spin j state, because it's been, you know, the spin's been raised by a half and lowered by a half. But it's a different state. Okay, we have to treat y equals 0 separately, because we can't lower its, y equals 0 has the third component of spin 0, and you can't take it below 0. So that's just a slightly different treatment, so it's almost the same, really. So we have j equals 0, p mu. And of course, because j equals 0, j3 has to be 0 as well. And if we act on this thing with q1 dot or q2 dot, we don't get a linear combination. We just get the one state. We just get the j equals plus a half state, because there's no j equals minus a half states. So the plus corresponds to one dot, and the minus corresponds to two dot. And then we also have our product, one dot, two dot bar. Which again, just as we said on the right-hand board, is some different state with spin j. So, actually, if we act on this omega prime with a q bar beta dot, we get 0, okay? Because we'll have either 2q1 bars or 2q2 bars from the anti-commute. Whereas for the initial one, so for the initial one, gives us non-zero. And of course, you know, one of them is annihilated by the Q's, one of them is annihilated by the Q bars, and the Q bars, so this thing is spin, is in a 0.5 rep. These are spinners under the SU2 right, okay, with these SU2, these dotted indices. This is a spin 0 representation, so coupling it with a Q bar just gives us the a spinner under SU2 right, whereas for the omega is half comma 0, okay? So because you can act on it with the Q alphas. So if we do a parity transformation, we swap the dotted and undotted indices. We swap left and right-handed. Q alpha times omega. Thanks. So, parity. Swaps left and right. And actually, it takes, it swaps our two omega and omega primes. And so we can construct, if you wanted to, you can construct eigenvector of parity plus and minus, which are the two different linear combinations of omega and omega prime. Plus is a scalar, because it's, it spins 0 and it transforms evenly under parity, and minus is a pseudoscalar because it gets has a minus 1 eigenvalue under parity. Yep.
Down here we can disrupt the alpha omega is 1/2 0.
Yep. Well, omega is spin zero object, right? And hang on a second. And Q alpha is a spinner, right? So omega is actually 0, 0, and Q alpha is a left-handed spinner. So when you multiply them together, then singlet times this is just a 0.5. So it has the same Lorentz properties as the spinner.
So that's just a comment. That's not saying that omega prime has anything to do with.
No. Sorry. That just happened to be underneath that line. But.
Okay.
But yeah. So the point is that one of them, one of them is left-handed. One is right. Okay. The Q alphas and the Q bars are opposite. So let's summarize what we have with our massive representations. So we get whatever superspin we start with, we get a total spin is equal to the superspin for the first state in the supermultiplet, and we get a copy which is a different state, and then we get these other states, Q1 dot and 2 dot bar over root 2m acting on omega. And one of them has the third component of the spin reduced by 1/2. And the other one plus minus 1/2. and the other one has the third component reduced by half. Okay, good. Right. So is it today's tutorial, or was it Friday's that was work out some
rub?
Yeah, okay, so you get some practice with playing about with this today, which is good. So let's talk about more than one supersymmetry now. Yes. All we've got to operate on these guys is the keys and the key bars. Right? Well, there's some other. They're the only things that we're interested in that change the spin. And you can just act with any number of Q and Q bars that you can think of, but what you'll find is that you start getting zeros, right? Because Q1, Q1 is zero, etc. And because we've defined this thing that Q1 annihilates it, or Q2 annihilates it, these are the only non-zero things. There's nothing else. If you can check it out. Start, you either get back to one of these things, or you get zero. So yeah, those are the only things. Yep.
So what are those? Like, these aren't like massive cracks or anything, right? So they're broken. So what are these states?
These states are going to be some other particles. I mean, it's not something that we're basing on the standard model. Maybe it's like some supersymmetric gut representation, or it could be the low energy field theory limit, some extra representations from string theories or something. Yeah, that's right. So they could be ultra heavy. In other words, they could be like Planck scale or string scale states. So now, in extended SUSY, our spinner generators get an extra label, A, or B, which goes from 1 to N. So this is for N supersymmetries. We just get N copies of the Q and Q bars. Anti-commutation relation now changes because we have these indices, but it's a pretty trivial difference. We get the same thing as we had before, but with a delta AB. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask a very naive question from this previous analysis.
Okay.
You've written everything out in terms of super operators, the spinner operators acting on states.
Yes.
But these states are going to be some quantum field in a quantum field theory.
Yes.
So the fact that you've written them as cats, it's kind of a hides that fact. It wasn't obvious to me that these are not some Hilbert space.
Yeah, but I mean, that's right. It's the space of operators. We write these operators, in that form anyway, right? So in the same, I'm just meaning a status like that. Fair enough. Yeah, it's an operator space, not just functional spacing. So what we see here is we have n copies of the supersymmetry algebra and the crosstalk between the Q and Q bars with the different n's just gives you zero. And then there is one difference which is a bit more substantial. So the anti-commutation relation between the Q's now doesn't have to be zero. It can have some operator on the right-hand side. So these things, okay, people, this is going to turn out to be an abelian operator, okay? It's going to commute with everything else. So people sometimes just call this a number. You've got to think, in general, you've got to think it's an operator, but it acts on a state and gives you back an eigenvalue. So these are called, that's why they're called the central charges rather than some central charge operator. These ZABs, they're, So they're anti-symmetric under swapping A and B, as they have to be because of this anti-commutation relation. And they commute with all generators. So the relevant ones are all the ones in the super Poincaré group. Commute with themselves as well. And they commute with the internal symmetry generators and with the Q bars and everything. So they're an abelian, the ZABs form an abelian subalgebra of the internals, you know, of the symmetry. And actually, you can pick their values, you know, on the states to some extent. And some states you might say, oh, okay, let's pick the example where all the ZABs are zero, for instance. So and so now we can imagine we get an R symmetry because again we can do some non-trivial mixing or you know more than just a phase definition of these Q and Q bars and the algebra won't change. Okay, so there's this automorphism and so now. If we have ZAB equals zero, we can transform the Qs in this way. UAB times Q alpha B and Q bar alpha dot A prime. So now we multiply it by this U matrix in the AB space. And as long as UU dagger is 1, then as long as these ZABs are 0, then none of the commutation relations or anything has changed from going from the unprimed to the primed Qs. Okay, so this is a symmetry. This is an R symmetry in the theory. And this is, you know, any matrix which is n by n, which satisfies this, is a unitary matrix. Okay, so U is a member of UN. So we have a UNR symmetry. But if you, so now you say, well, okay, fair enough. What if we start making some of the ZABs not zero? Well, of course, the S means that the determinant is plus 1, right? But here, we're allowed other... I'm not sure. Is it S-U-N?
You still have a...
There is an extra...
It's really complicated, but you still have the U1, and you have an N equals 1 case. But you also have an S-U-N. So you have U1 plus S-U-N. So
that is U-N, yeah. That's the thing. I mean, really, yeah, UN is just SUN times a different U, times a U1, right, with an extra phase rotation. So, I mean, it's clear that, okay, what he said. Oh, sorry, I was going to say, yeah, what if some ZABs are non-zero? Well, this commutation relation now starts, you can't, this symmetry doesn't work anymore because we get the product of two U's on the left-hand side, okay? So, which you can't get rid of by multiplying U daggers because the right-hand side is non-zero. So now... the symmetry is smaller than UN, and in fact, if you you might still have some of the ZABs to be zero, and you know, if there are only two of them that are zero, you might think there's a U2 symmetry. So, but in general, if you have some ZABs not equal to zero, the R symmetry is some subgroup of UN. Okay, we've just got time to do massless representations of extended CZ, which is nice. So, okay, again we have our particle moving along the Z direction at speed of light. And now, for our anti-commutation relations, we have the same thing as n equals 1 with a delta alpha beta, alpha AB. So now we have zeros for all of the Q alpha A's. Q1 A's, all the Q1 A's annihilate the states. These massless states, okay? So, all ZAB, that implies that all of the ZABs are zero, since we can imagine acting on this massless state with this anticommutator. And on the right-hand side, it's going to annihilate the state. Okay, so all the ZABs have to be zero for these massless states. So now, I mean, I could have done this before, but... in order to get it looking just like our raising and lowering operators that we used to for the harmonic oscillator, for instance. And actually, because it will involve less writing, let's just write the lowering operator as Q2A over 2 root E, and a raising one, a dagger, as Q2 bar A over 2 root E. Okay, so now, if in terms of these raising and lowering operators, our anti-commutation relation just looks like that. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Why do you have different metrics like the first case where we just have to add data AB 1001, 1000, that is the case for N equals 0, for N equals 1?
This does look like N equals 1, right? This was exactly what we had for N equals 1, but with a delta AB. Yeah. So what? That's how Fernando's got it in his notes. That's not.
Well, we did it this last time. The metric there was 1000.
Was it? No, I think it was this. It's like that in Fernando's notes, but no, but that's different. So this is it's. But in any case, whichever way you do it, you see. Okay, so if you, I think with this thing, then that way, then this is correct. If you write, as Fernando did, with the downstairs index, then obviously when you raise it, you get a minus here, and then you should have a 1 in the top left-hand corner. But it's all the same thing. I mean, I think the difference is that it swaps a 1 and a 2 when you act with the Qs. There actually isn't going to be. I think this is a Euclidean, you know, it's just Euclidean in the A and B space. I just did it because it's, you know, makes it more obvious about summing over indices, but it doesn't matter. So let's start with our state. It's exactly the same procedure as before. We have a state which is, you know, annihilated by the Qs. And let's say it has solicity lambda naught. And we just have one state, okay? We start with this one state. Then we act on it with a raising op. So, okay, this is defined such that a lowering operator acting on it gives you 0, right? Now we act on it with one of our n raising operators. Remember, we can choose from A from 1 to n. We add one onto the helicity. And, you know, there are n of these states because we've got n different raising operators. So now, of course, we can act with two different operators. We're not allowed to act with the same one because they anti-commute, therefore it will give you 0. This gives us helicity non-zero plus 1. So if there are n choices for this first one, we can pick any of the other n minus 1 operators for the second one, and they anti-commute, so the two different orderings are equivalent. So the number of different states, I can write it, it is just half that. Okay. This is the number of ways of picking two unordered objects from N. And then you can see how this is going to go, right? Okay, all the way down to the case where we have n different operators and there's only one of these states. So we know how many states we have when we sum all these up, because all of these states are, we take our n raising operators and we either apply each one or we don't, okay? So that's the binary choice. So the total number of states then is just 2 to the n. And there's a check on that, which is just if you sum these coefficients, you do get 2 to the n. All right. Let's do some examples, and then we'll finish. I'll just write down some common massive representations. So the n equals 2 vector with lambda 0, 0 has helicity 0, helicity half, and helicity 1 states in it. Okay, these two look like an n equals 1 vector multiplet, and these two look like n equals 1 chiral multiplet. Then there's n equals 2 hypermultiplet, which has lambda 0 is 1. Oh, I should point out. So with this one, remember we're in massless fields. So we have CPT conjugates here with negative helicities. For the hypermultiplet, we have a chiral and an anti-chiral n equals 1 multiplet, anti-chiral, anti-chiral. We'll explain more later what these chiral and anti-chiral mean. This one is CPT self-conjugate anyway, so there's no need to add the additional CPT conjugates. And then there's an n equals 4 vector field . So if you just write a table with the number of states under the helicities, minus 1, minus 1/2, 0, 1, half, and 1. 1, 4, 6, 4, 1. So this is the only n equals 4 multiplet with helicities less than 2. And there's one n equals 8 multiplet, which is interesting. Lambda 0 is minus 2. So this has a helicity 2 states. So the graviton, in other words, she's got several states, 28, 56, and 70. Okay, that's it for today. Yeah, thanks. The Q1s and the Q2s take you up or down, yeah, in that, in these directions. That's right. Okay, next time we'll do extended Suzy massive representations, yeah. Those are the useful ones. I don't. Are there consistent ones with odd powers? No one ever talks about them.
I think they just reduced the other ones.
I don't know the real answer, but the only ones people discuss are those ones you just mentioned. You can't. You get a problem. N equals 8 is the highest you go, because if you don't get sensible quantum field theories with spins higher than 2. Okay, I mean already with 2 you're having trouble, but. There's good reason. We'll talk about this later, but there's good reasons to believe. Don't write down a field theory with spin higher than 2. And all of the higher ends, there are no multiplets with helicities 2 or less. So this is as high as people go. And they only discuss the, I don't know why, the even ones. Maybe it's a good research project. Homework problem.